Welcome to another edition of KUAR's Week in Review podcast, the public radio podcast in Arkansas where we take a look back at the news from the week that was. For the week ending Friday, July 14th.
Lawyers for an abortion provider and lawyers for the state present their first formal arguments in court over a lawsuit challenging four abortion laws passed by the legislature this year.
With crime, interstate expansion, and a state-controlled school district on the mind, and many other positive things, we check in with the developing race for Little Rock's mayor.
I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die, testing the limitations of free speech at the Pulaski County Quorum Court.
And will the UA Little Rock Trojans don football helmets once again, though this time the football helmets significantly increased in safety due to upgrades in technology. A look at an effort to get the UA Little Rock throwing the pigskin at War Memorial Stadium. That's all coming up for the Week in Review. I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
So let's get off right at the bat. The biggest topic, something facing Arkansas women especially, it's a pretty big deal. These are some of the most restrictive abortion laws in the country, were passed by the state legislature. Several of them are about to go into effect at the end of this month. Chris, you went to a little bit the oral arguments opening up this case in U.S. Circuit Court, correct?
U.S. District Court.
Christine Baker.
For the Eastern District of Arkansas, presided over by Federal Judge Christine Baker, yes. This was a hearing on a request for a preliminary injunction against four laws, a lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union and the Center for Reproductive Rights on behalf of a local obstetrician gynecologist named Frederick Hopkins, who works at the Little Rock Family Planning Services. And these laws that are under question...
There's four of them in this particular suit.
Yes. All but one of them go into effect at the end of the month, or August 1st. Probably one of the most controversial of them is the so-called dismemberment abortion ban, which prohibits a procedure known as dilation and evacuation, which is a very commonly used abortion procedure in the second trimester of pregnancy. Another law being challenged is a ban on use of abortion for sex selection passed this year. And another law requires providers of abortions to minors or girls under the age of 18 to submit tissue samples to local law enforcement. And the purpose behind that was to ensure that the abortion didn't come about because of any coercive circumstances like sexual abuse by an adult. At least that was the stated purpose. And the fourth law would require abortion providers to notify a woman's family about the right to participate in the disposal of the remains of the aborted fetus.
And that last one is the one that's generated a whole bunch of national and international controversy, with some publications saying that it would make it so that if you want to have an abortion, you'd have to have your rapist potentially notified and approved it. But even the Arkansas Democrats, who almost all voted for this, actually, they say that's not quite accurate. But can you go through some of the arguments you actually heard from attorneys?
Specifically about the dilation and evacuation statute, the attorney for Hopkins, Susan Talcott Camp, was making the argument in court, said basically that the dilation evacuation is pretty much the only procedure known in Arkansas available to women who are pursuing an abortion in the second trimester. Other procedures, she said, can be performed in the second trimester are either too risky or they require special training from the physician, and no physicians in Arkansas have that training. And also require some of those procedures, other procedures require inpatient facilities. She also said the ban doesn't pass the undue burden test, which refers to, so the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld abortion as a constitutionally protected right through various case law. And an undue burden basically means that it's making it exceptionally difficult for a woman to go through and carry out that right that's been guaranteed by the U.S. Supreme Court. On the other laws, they're kind of bunched together in a way because they all, in the view of the ACLU and the Center for Reproductive Rights, represented kind of a regulatory overreach that stigmatized women for having an abortion. And the plaintiff's counsel also argued that these laws violate the privacy of a woman because of disclosure of certain medical records, particularly in the ones regarding the sex selection via abortion and submitting tissue samples to local law enforcement in the case of abortion done for a minor. And so those were kind of the main issues there for the plaintiff's side. On the other side, the state counsel argued, the Deputy Solicitor General for the Attorney General of Arkansas, argued that the D&E procedure had not been upheld yet by the Supreme Court, or hasn't been really tested that way, although some lower courts have barred the procedure.
And it is common, though.
Yeah, it is very common. Yeah, it's pretty much the only procedure used in the second trimester.
At least in Arkansas.
And the suggestion is that it's the most common second trimester abortion procedure used all over the place. But he said that, you know, it hasn't been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, and that it is feasible for abortion providers to get the training and expertise and facilities to perform other procedures in the second trimester. On the challenge to the other
I just want to say one point that I've heard, because I talked with some ACLU attorneys whenever they first announced this lawsuit before they heard the first oral arguments, and I don't know if this came up in court or not. It'd be interesting if the state tried to address it. But the argument was that abortion and this procedure have lower error rates than many other medical procedures, that abortion is actually one of the safest types of medical procedures that a lot of patients can have. But anyway.
Abortion in general or this particular procedure?
Both, but also this procedure. That there's nothing that was extra risk. It's being portrayed as if it's risky, but it's not. It's not more so than anything else.
Yeah, and there. I think what I heard her say, the lawyer for Dr. Hopkins, was that, yeah, some of these other procedures that are available in the second trimester were indeed riskier than this one. So the state's lawyer kind of said that the Center for Reproductive Rights and the ACLU are conjuring up problems that don't exist and conjuring up obstacles that hide in the shadows. Those were his words. He also depicted the D&E procedure in very graphic terms. He said it involves tearing the fetus apart limb from limb, and he called it a brutal and barbaric procedure. Whereas the plaintiff's lawyer, Ms. Camp, basically described the procedure in medical or technical terms when she was defending it. And so it's unclear what the judge will decide. Obviously, we're expecting a written ruling. In the courtroom were, of course, the lawyers, but also people affiliated with both sides of this issue. Mm-hmm. You had Rita Sklar, the executive director of the ACLU, in there. You had Jerry Cox of the Arkansas Family Council, who basically wrote all the abortion laws in the state, or at least provided a lot of the language. You had State Representative Andy Mayberry, who from Saline County, Republican, who sponsored the D&E procedure.
And his wife held the seat the previous term. She also was responsible for some abortion restriction.
And she was there as well, Julie Mayberry. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some of them spoke, since you can't take or you can't really record and broadcast proceedings from inside the court, they spoke. Here's Andy Mayberry. He spoke after the courtroom had adjourned. And on both sides of the debate, I think, you know, for the past 40 years since the Roe versus Wade decision, we're kind of familiar with the overarching arguments that both proponents and opponents of abortion submit. And so here's Andy Mayberry giving his view, which is the protection of the unborn.
I believe very, very strongly that we as a society are measured by how we treat our most weak and vulnerable. I've heard that before, and I believe it to be true. There is no more vulnerable, there is no more weak than the unborn children who are supposed to be the safest in their mother's womb.
And you can hear that it was actually raining outside, so we're all kind of huddled underneath the awning of the entrance of the federal courthouse. We also heard from Bettina Brownstein, who's a lawyer for the ACLU, spoke to some reporters afterwards. And here she is kind of responding to some of the language used regarding the D&E procedure, especially as being a brutal, barbaric act. She took exception with that description.
I think that's unfortunate sensationalization, and I think we need to focus on that it's a woman's personal right to choose whether or not to have an abortion. And that is the most important thing. It's a constitutional right. Most Americans support it, and that's what we have to focus on and not get distracted by sensationalist descriptions that have nothing to do with a woman's right to choose or a woman's health or a woman's safety.
And so the court adjourned. We're expecting a written ruling from Judge Baker on this request for a preliminary injunction. It's probable that it would come out before these laws go into effect, some decision one way or another.
All right. Chris Hickey, thanks a lot for giving us this update on the ever-growing battle between abortion and reproductive rights in Arkansas. This is just the latest chapter in an ongoing saga, and I'm sure we'll see more in the next legislative session, regardless of outcomes of this. Let's move on to a little bit of local politics. This will be pretty nice, right? Okay.
Yep.
And so we're talking about the Little Rock mayor's race, which Mark Stodola, it's a nonpartisan office, though Mark Stodola is a Democrat, and at this point his announced opponent, Warwick Sabin, who announced this week, also, of course, a Democratic state representative currently. But Mayor Stodola has been in the seat since, 2007 or so, I believe? So, you know, pretty long time. It was under his tenure, they about doubled the mayor's salary and turned it in from what was sometimes described as a part-time role from Jim Daley to a full-time strong mayor, so to speak.
He also added a chief of staff, I think, as a position.
And, it's always important to note that Little Rock's government situation is not like that of some cities. He splits duties with a city manager that's not elected, the city manager runs a lot of things. The board has some at-large. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on with the city council. But anyway, the mayor, of course, has some important roles to do. So, Chris, you were at the breaking edge of this Warwick Sabin announcement, so breaking edge that you disregarded a request to have the information embargoed. The Arkansas Times gladly disobeyed it, saying, we don't agree to such things. But why don't you tell me a little bit about
it? It is kind of silly.
Oh, okay. Damn. Okay, so why don't you tell me a little bit about Warwick Sabin's announcement and who this guy is? Why is he running?
Well, Warwick Sabin, as you mentioned, has been in the State House of Representatives for a number of years, since 2011, 2013, something like that. He's, I think,
a rare state legislator that is in some public consciousness. Probably not too many people, but
a rare Democratic state legislator that is in some public consciousness. He's certainly made an effort to reach across the aisle, sponsor some bipartisan legislation, including an ethics amendment that a couple sessions ago that turned into term limits reduction. And we don't have to go into all of that, but it was an example of his trying to work with Republicans. And, you know, in this last session, he did sponsor a earned income tax credit legislation to compete with the governor's tax cut proposal for low-income people.
Can you tell me a little bit about his private life outside of the state legislature, where it seems like he's got a lot of accomplishments that are, it seems like, I don't want to say like he's the millennial candidate or something, but like he founded the Arkansas Innovation Hub, he worked with that, and Windrock International. He represents Hillcrest and the Heights.
Mm-hmm. And parts of downtown, midtown. He was a student body president of University of Arkansas when he went there. Studied in Oxford or something. I don't. But anyways, he's kind of seen as the young voice of the Democratic
Party. Super well
Party.
Connected. Right? Yeah. Goes to all sorts of community events all over the place.
You'll see him around town. Yeah.
All right, so let's get a little bit into Mayor Mark Stodola, who we've known a little bit through this podcast and different city things. So here's the statement from Little Rock Mayor Mark Stodola. Yesterday, announcement was made about the 2018 Little Rock mayor's race. First, I'd like to make one thing clear to citizens and my friends and supporters to know that I do intend to run for re-election. My number one priority right now is Little Rock and the challenges we are facing, not a political race that is 17 months away. This is in relation a lot of the Power Ultra Lounge shooting. So the mayor has got other priorities. Violence in the community is a huge topic. That's what Sabin announced on the heels of the shooting. I don't know if that's coincidental or not. He didn't specifically mention it too much, and I don't believe. But anyway, he's been part of many meetings to help resolve this. There's a walk on Saturday that I'm sure both of them will be at. But one thing that's interesting about Stodola's announcement, he says, I have dedicated new energy and new ideas into making Little Rock a great place. And I think that Sabin's campaign slogan is new energy and new ideas. Mm-hmm. But Stodola clearly says, hey, you don't own a claim to new energy and ideas. I also have them. And we've seen the tremendous things in the River Market, for instance. Well, we got a phone call. We'll be back on the podcast in a moment. So we're back. We got interrupted by a phone call there. We had to do an interview for the Friday afternoon and Saturday morning newscast there in the middle of the podcast taping. A little distracted here. But anyway, so that's the race for Little Rock mayor in a nutshell at this point. I expect several more people will run. It's worth noting that in a majority-minority city, we don't have an African-American candidate at this juncture. Still 17 months out, I expect there'll be more people running for office. Maybe a conservative as well would like to run.
I think it's important to note a couple. I mean, what I think are maybe big issues that will be part of the mayor's race. One would be the expansion of Interstate 30 through downtown, which yes. Mayor Stodola has been at least a lukewarm proponent of. At least he hasn't vocally opposed it at all, which a lot of community groups have expressed opposition towards because what it could do to further divide the city potentially or take away emphasis from developing mass transit or other forms of transportation. Warwick Sabin, it came out early as a opponent of that plan from the highway department.
Yeah, alternative energy has been a big focus of his for throughout many things.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, this is kind of a nice segue. Fortunate for us, perhaps the show was even designed this way. Pulaski County Quorum Court, another matter of local governance tied to Little Rock in response to the shooting where over two dozen people were injured at the Little Rock, the Ultra Lounge there off of South Broadway downtown. Obviously, people are trying to figure out what to do about the shootings. It's not just this one shooting where it appears several different people probably shot at each other at this rap concert. There's been drive-by shootings, all sorts of neighborhood shootings. People regularly say in the newspaper, oh, that's those Monroe boys. That's that Monroe gang. So it's people can literally know which street sometimes that these gangs or whatever you want to call them are. So there's been a lot of shootings. So what are you going to do about it? Obviously, you talk about the school district, poverty. There's all sorts of like long range solutions to this that are there's no easy fix that you can say we're going to change this policy and it'll be different overnight. But some people are looking for that easy fix anyway. There is a proposal by Justice of the Peace Judy Green to encourage cities in Pulaski County to ban for 180 days any concerts or performances by music acts and the like that would be deemed to encourage violence. There are a lot of comments on a Facebook post about this saying that it was like a racist attempt to ban rap music and such. Worth noting that Judy Green is African-American, lives on State Street in central Little Rock, arguably is probably pretty familiar with a lot of the shootings and everything going on. This is a solution. She thinks rap music is particularly violent. A number of attorneys for the Quorum Court, the majority of the Quorum Court itself, said this is probably a violation of First Amendment rights. It's maybe well-intended that you want to stop shootings, but you can't ban a certain style of music or people saying things that you know they want to about violence. I talked to our resident music historian, Stephen Cook, from Arkansongs and author of Louis Jordan, Son of Arkansas, Father in R&B, a little bit about this, and he notes that violent motifs in music are nothing new.
We're probably talking about this because it is so asinine that you know, historically, you know, you can go back hundreds of years, if not millennia, with opera, a lot of it promotes violence. I mean, and who's to say that that incites violence? Coming even closer to our time, we have, you know, in the 1950s, they tried to ban rock and roll.
I asked him if he thought it was okay that, or why rap seems to be singled out. Obviously, rock and roll was singled out in the 50s because it was the dominant emerging youth popular music. No one really cares about rock music anymore. But why is rap get such a bad rap was my joke.
Well, they do discuss violence in rap music, but again, they discuss it in so many different genres. I think maybe there's a lot of first-person songs, or people assume that this is first-person. They don't maybe give rappers like they would give other writers and artists the ability to that not be them, you know, to have the artistic arm's length to be discussing, you know, something that didn't actually happen to them, but something that they're just writing about, or this is, you know, the things they see in society.
I thought that was nicely said. People don't always give them the same arm's length deference. But I pulled up several examples on the internet of rap music or music that might be too violent. So, you know, a bit of a, I don't know if we're allowed to say on the radio, on the podcast radio, but a bit
sure
of...
Sure we are. But, it's not a, FCC rules aren't applicable to
podcasts. Well, I don't know what our sense of decency is at this station. Apart from the laws and regulations of that govern us, what our personal sense of decency is. But here, it might be too violent. Anyway, this is Finesse Two Times, who is the rapper at the club that the shooting happened at. He got arrested later on an unrelated gun charge. In his video that he has for the song, I think it's the real video of him, them taping him being released from jail, because they have him like leaving the building in the clothes and putting on his watch when he gets in the car, and them handing him like a mixed drink and stuff. So anyway, you know, wow. Clearly he's singing about something that's happened in his life or whatever. But this next one is, someone wrote a blog post here. It looks like Morgan Johnson from Project Give a Damn. They outlined a Little Rock Central High School student who got shot after a football game last year in 2016. And he's been shot two times in his life. And here's his song. They call him Feezy Red. And if I'm a craft, then I perfect it. I had to break a fish like a prolly. I had to get some space like a cunny. I had to drop a nigga like a cunny. I had some long nights with my homie. I seen the blue lights, so I'm running. I keep my tool tight, never fumble. I'm in the hood with some niggas that's wrong. This clip full of hollows, I swear you don't want it. When it's the season, we murder a pound. We out here for real, it's not just for the moment. A passion to kill and a passion for money. She love her kids, my stash and my mama. Don't like the diss, the smack, hold her honey. Niggas got killed for they grab the diploma. The good die young and the bad live long. Take a picture of the last long. I'm thinking about the old days. I preach what I was taught. Going back to my old ways. Anyway, some lines from this, quoted from this blog post. Instead of a war on poverty, they gave a war on drugs so the police can bother me and such. So, you know, these people are clearly singing about their life, which includes lots of violence, but it's just the neighborhood they live in. Here's a group from Stuttgart that their name is Young, Violent, and Reckless. Something like that. But their lyrics are actually nice. Well, I just want to change that so you can shine bright. You the love of my life. Baby, I'ma gonna treat you right. I'm gonna treat you right, from Young, Violent, and Restless. You know, so it's hard to, if they were gonna actually try to do something where they actually profiled all the thousands of acts that played, even this one, whose name is about violence, their content is actually not. And Stephen Cook and others have pointed out that country music has a lot of violent motifs. Here's a group from the late 50s or early 60s, the Lovin' Brothers. I met a little girl in Knoxville, a town we all know well. And every Sunday evening out in her home I dwell. We went to take an evening walk about a mile from town. I picked a stick up off the ground. So, anyway, like, you can be pretty genteel and wear cowboy suits and smile and have haircuts and sing on, you know, 1950s. Network television shows and have some pretty violent lyrics.
Yeah, I'll say. Jeez. I took her by her golden curls. I dragged her round and around. Then threw her in the river that flows through Knoxville town. Anyway, that's enough. But, you know, violence is in a lot of different genres, clearly. And there's probably no attempt to bring this moratorium proposal back, or
I don't think so. They actually passed it in an amended form where they struck out all references to the moratorium, and it just said encourage cities to facilitate a dialogue about violence. Oh. So yeah, fine.
How are they going to facilitate the dialogue?
Oh, there's no specifics. It's just the county government's officially encouraging.
All right.
Yeah. So. Good. Hey, what are we doing? Another local news story. Okay, football, UALR Trojans. Excuse me, University of Arkansas Little Rock Trojans, UA Little Rock Trojans. We've been undefeated for about a half a century. What's going on?
Yeah, ever since the glory days of the late 40s and early 50s.
Right.
When we were Little Rock University, I think, or something. By the way, we're affiliated with the university, but editorially independent. Just, you know, disclaimer out there. The athletic department of UA Little Rock announced this week that they're going to be hiring an outside firm, to do a feasibility study for the football program here at this Division I school where we are. Of course, we've got basketball, baseball, soccer, all other sports.
A heck of a good basketball team at times.
Well, yeah, maybe not last season, but the season before that.
Yeah, sure. NCAA tournament victories.
Right. And so a lot of folks have been calling for, or at least requesting, a look at this possibility for a feasibility study in a football team. You got State Parks and Tourism Director Kane Webb, who's been advocating for this, Little Rock Mayor Mark Stodola. There was a student at UA Little Rock who circulated a petition that gathered 1,000 signatures in support of a football team. The Student Government Association voted to support it and presented their case before the chancellor and the director of the athletic department.
Chase Conk, whose brother is an NFL player.
Oh, is that so? Yeah. I didn't know that. Well, let's hear from Mr. Conk, the director of the athletic department, describing the situation and why they want to do a feasibility study.
At this point, you know, everything is really emotional. You know, we don't have any hard data. We don't have the numbers. And so we're really excited about the study to be able to give us that data and be able to really dig into what would it take to have a football program and a marching band here at UA Little Rock. So hats off to our students, and really this is a response to something that's been talked about for a long, long time. But in order to make the best decision for our university, we got to have the data, and so that's what this process will bring us.
And I asked him what the data would potentially show.
Yeah, certainly the financial piece is probably the biggest part of it, but in that, they'll dig into facility needs. What's our current situation within our department? As we compete as a Division I AAA institution, they'll assess what our staffing looks like today, what we would need in order to support probably another 200 student-athletes within our department. They'll look hard at our university. They'll provide us data on an impact to enrollment that other institutions have seen when they've added the sport of FBS football. And they'll also look at the local economic impact.
So ultimately, the question is whether or not it will drain money or add money to the university and the local community.
And I guess it's assumed that they would play at War Memorial Stadium probably, which Razorbacks are always rumored to be vacating their one-year game. It used to be a two-year game. The state has indicated they want to stop supporting them so much. They want the stadium to start generating more revenue. But
yeah, and that's what Mr. Conk said. War Memorial is only about 2 miles away from the UALR campus or UA Little Rock campus, so it's conveniently located, and it's in the central part of the city. So yeah.
Everybody knows it is a football stadium anyway, and teams play there, so it's got that tradition to a football attached to it. They'll have to make room for the Little Rock Rangers Soccer Club, the National Premier Soccer League, semi-pro amateur league, which just wrapped up their season in Tulsa, their second season. So.
Well, I guess the soccer season takes place during the summer and football typically takes place during the fall. So I guess I don't know if there would be too much overlap.
Oh, yeah, I guess not. You'll have to make room mentally for the devotion of the limited sports attention of the Little Rock community.
Yeah, there's that, I guess. But in terms of timeline, their Office of Procurement is supposed to put out a request for proposals from outside firms to do a feasibility study sometime in this fall. They're expecting it to take about 6 to 7 months. They'll have the results of it in the spring of next year. Conk said that the City of Little Rock, the State Department of Parks and Tourism, and the UA Little Rock Athletic Department are splitting the cost for the feasibility study. Couldn't say how much it would cost. Didn't want to give an estimate because they haven't had any proposals yet. But he said that the UA Little Rock's portion of the funding would come from private donations.
Back when I was in my Midland years, the Arkansas Twisters Arena Football 2 team played at the then new Altel Arena, now Verizon Arena. And it seemed like they got maybe like 10,000 people a game for many games for a season or two. They ended up folding because the league itself folded, I believe. And of course, the Razorback games, there's tens of thousands of people that go. So there's definitely some appetite, but it's hard to say how many people turn up for UALR football game. I really don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, I guess Arkansas State has pretty good success with their football program. At least it's popular. They're expanding their stadium, or they're planning to.
I mean, the basketball games, they seem like they get a few thousand people sometimes. And
yeah. And
I've definitely been to the Jack Stevens Center when it was totally full. And one time I was there and it was totally full, and I think they were getting ready for the Sun Belt tournament, and they played some video of like the 40s or 50s UALR or Little Rock, whatever, football team, and like everyone went nuts. You know, what is,
I mean,
who knows?
You know,
that's why they're doing the study.
Football's, the ultimate spectator sport in America, I guess. NFL ratings are high, and so is college football, but I don't know. I mean, having that gap in the history, who knows what that will do to the spectatorship of Little Rock community.
All right. Well, you know, I think we did it. I think that's the week in review. I think we've reviewed the week and the news. Obviously, the most important story here is the abortion story, and we'll be following up with that in the weeks ahead in advance of that preliminary injunction and all these other stories. But remember to subscribe to this podcast. You can do that wherever you find your podcasts, iTunes and the like. Find this at KUAR.org. Make sure to share it with your friends on Facebook and Twitter, and let them know that, hey, that's that thing I was talking about this weekend. It was right here. I heard it on this podcast. Thanks for listening to the KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
Have a good week.